Have you ever seen a sign like that? I haven't really until today. I just kind of made that one up because I thought it fit well to illustrate what I wanted to talk about tonight. But you know, I've seen a lot of situations where they needed a sign like that. In fact, there are a lot of situations in people's lives, and it may very well be that you've been there and you've felt that, and you thought maybe, looking back especially, we always have clearer vision looking back than we do looking ahead, it seems. There may have been some times when you think maybe, well, I needed a sign like that day or that week or that year. The text that I want us to begin at tonight is Psalm 127. The story of this lesson is a story of evolution. Not the bad kind of evolution that they're trying to get our kids to believe in school, but evolution in the sense of things changing and adapting and growing and so forth. For several weeks now, in fact, a couple of times, I have emailed Paul or Brad an email telling them what my sermon was going to be about on a particular Sunday night, and I would say the text is going to be Psalm 127, unless the Lord builds the house. In fact, I even went so far as to send Paul an outline that I intended to use, and I'm kind of, in a way, glad he's not here tonight, because what I'm going to say tonight, this doesn't resemble at all what I sent him that the sermon was going to be. But anyway, the couple of Sunday morning sermons turned into two-part sermons, and I kept pushing this one on ahead. And then as I got to working on this one, I saw that there were some directions that I really needed to go that were not in my original plan. So we're going to start there in Psalm 127. That's going to be our, well, call it a springboard, because we're going to get up a little momentum right there, and we're going to jump back off into the book of 1 Samuel. But I do want us to have this concept fully understood as we go into this, and as we read this text from Psalm 127, it'll become more and more clear to us, I think. There are times in all of our lives when we realize, especially, as I said, looking back on a situation, we realize that we wasted a bunch of time. We were working for nothing. You know, there's a certain amount of that, I'm convinced, that has to be in every life, and I think even the very best of those who live full and fulfilling lives upon this earth probably have a certain amount of that in their lives that's just a part of normal existence on this earth. We're not perfect. There's no way that we'll get everything right the first time or the first try. What we need to make sure, though, is that we don't spend all of our time regretting the times that we didn't accomplish anything. There will be some times when you'll be working for nothing. But hopefully we can maintain a healthy balance so that we'll see the most of our lives going forward. And that amount of time that we have to spend working for nothing won't be so great that it would be the thing we'd be remembered for. Psalm 127, verses 1 and 2. This is one of the Psalms of Ascents. You'll see it there in the heading, usually, in your chapter divisions. I'm told that the Psalms of Ascents were those Psalms that were recited or in some cases chanted by the people as they went up and came down from worshiping God. This Psalm is attributed in the heading to Solomon. Remember, that little heading there that you see is kind of like commentary. It's not inspired. It is just many times it's traditional information or information that's historically attributed to non-inspired sources. But whether this is a Psalm of David or a Psalm of Solomon, not really all that important. It's in the Bible, and we need to take heed to what it says. This is a passage that has a lot of different things in it, a lot of different direction we could go, but the thing that most people usually find here in this chapter, the little short chapter of five verses, is a great deal of teaching on the home and the importance of establishing the home with God's help and working in the right way with God's help, and then the value and the importance of children in the home. That's not really where we're going tonight. We're going to talk about something entirely different. As we get into this, I hope you'll see it clearly. Verses 1 and 2, unless the Lord builds the house, they labor in vain who build it. Unless the Lord guards the city, the watchman keeps awake in vain. It is vain for you to rise up early, to retire late, eat the bread of painful labors, for he gives to his beloved even in his sleep. You'll notice the word vain two times, in vain, one time, the third time, it is vain. But we understand what that term means. It means for nothing. And so the Bible here says that unless the Lord builds the house, those who build it are laboring in vain. They're working for nothing. Unless the Lord keeps the city, the watchman stays awake, but in vain. He's working for nothing if he doesn't have the Lord on his side. If we have allowed our lives to become consumed with our work and our occupation, and we rise up early and we work so hard all day long and we stay up late, and we've got a phrase or a saying that we talk about burning the candle at both ends. And I think that's exactly what this passage means, at least one of the things that it means. Worrying and troubling ourselves to such an extent that we literally harm ourselves, and usually the driving thing behind that kind of lifestyle is the desire to be able to have more things and to have better things and to have as many things as the next fellow. And so he reminds us that it's the Lord who blesses us, and he even blesses his children in their sleep. King Saul has been in my recent Bible study quite a bit. And as I examined these verses one more time in trying to put this lesson together, it occurred to me how perfect an illustration King Saul is of one who was working. He was under construction, but he was working for nothing. We'll leave Psalm 127 now, because I think we've established what the reality of what that passage teaches us. And let's go back now to 1 Samuel. We'll actually look at chapters 13, 14, and 15 for just a minute or two each. But I want to kind of summarize the life of King Saul, the first king of Israel. You'll remember in 1 Samuel chapter 8, the people demanded a king. They told Samuel that they no longer wanted to be reigned or ruled over by judges. They wanted to have kings like their neighbors around them. And you remember how that it really hurt Samuel's feelings. It made him feel a tremendous sense of rejection. And God reminded Samuel, You don't need to worry about this. It's not you that they've rejected. God says it's me that they're rejecting, but I'm going to give them what they want. I'm going to give them a king. And as you read through the rest of the book, chapter 9 introduces us to Saul, the son of Kish, who, strangely enough, in chapter 9 was on a mission. He was on a mission to find his father's runaway donkeys that had escaped the farm and had gone into parts unknown, and so he and some of his servants were looking for them, and in the course of chapter 9, Saul comes into contact with Samuel and attends a feast that was given, that Samuel was there. In chapter 10, Saul is taken aside by Samuel and is anointed to be the king over Israel, over God's people. The latter part of chapter 10 shows how that Samuel acknowledged Saul publicly to the people. And in 1 Samuel chapter 11, we find his first effort on the battlefield as he leads God's people in fighting against the Ammonites, who had become an enemy of God's people and were trying to take over some of the territory and were a very troublesome group of people, and Saul defeats them with God's help. In chapter 13, the first part of the chapter, it tells us that Saul began ruling over Israel when he was 30 years old, and he ruled for 42 years. When you know the whole story of King Saul and you look back down the road at his life, in some ways it's amazing that the story from chapter 13 through the end of the book takes up 42 years. Because it is in the beginning at chapter 13 that Saul was first told something that he would be told again. God has rejected you from being the king of his people. The kingdom is going to be removed from you. What that meant was that Saul's descendants would not be rulers over Israel. Because of some things that he had done, he had displeased God. We're going to look at some of those in just a minute. He was given that message right at the very beginning. And for 42 years, he continued to reign as the king over Israel. Chapters 13, 14, and 15 are the ones that we're going to look at in just a minute, at three failures in Saul's leadership, ways that he illustrates how that we often spend too much time working for nothing. But then we find the wars between God's people and the Philistines taking up a great portion of the rest of the book, with the exception of the time that Saul spent pursuing the one who would reign on his throne, David. Beginning in chapter 19 and going all the way through chapter 27, the record shows how that Saul pursued David, even often seemingly to the neglect of other more important matters that should have been handled and taken care of, as he tried in vain to kill David out of his sense of jealousy and hatred for the one who would reign in his place, the man after God's own heart. In chapter 28, Samuel has died, and whenever Saul asked God for his counsel, God doesn't answer. And so there in chapter 28, we read that sad story of the seance that was conducted by the witch of Endor, where Samuel was given Saul was given an opportunity to talk with Samuel back from the grave. And incidentally, Samuel didn't appear to be very happy about being disturbed, because his question, first of all, for Saul was, "Why have you bothered me?" And Saul says, "God won't answer me, and I need to know what to do." And Samuel reminded him yet again that he had rejected God, therefore God had rejected him from being king. And it's only a couple of chapters later that Saul and his three sons, including the beloved Jonathan, were killed on the battlefield by the Philistines. Now that's a summary of Saul's 42 years as king over Israel. Let's go back now to chapter 13 is where we'll start. And I want to just say a word or two about three different categories of people who are guilty of working for nothing. Number one, those who try to go ahead without God, no matter how hard they work, no matter how busy they are, without God, they're working for nothing. It's in chapter 13 that we find Saul's first great transgression as he is going about the business of preparing to go into battle. The Philistines are about to attack, and Samuel has told him that he would arrive at Gilgal on a certain occasion or after a certain number of days. And when that number of days had passed and Samuel was not there yet, and Saul looked around and he saw the people were beginning to lose their taste for going to battle against the Philistines, and Saul knew that there had to be a burnt offering and a sacrifice offered to God before they went into battle. And that was Samuel's job. And when Samuel didn't come, when Saul thought he should have come, Saul went ahead and stepped into the role of priest and offered the burnt offering. And it appears from reading the text that just about the time the smoke cleared from the sacrifice, Samuel comes riding in, and his first question to Saul was, "What have you done?" Saul essentially had gone ahead without following God's plan, without following the well-established pattern that was always to be followed whenever God's people went into battle. As Saul answers Samuel in verse 12, he says, "The Philistines will come down against me at Gilgal, and I've not asked the favor of the Lord. So I forced myself and offered the burnt offering." One thing that was always characteristic about Saul was that he never lacked for an answer. It never seems to have been a good answer, but he wasn't shy about speaking his mind. He says, "So, you know, I didn't want to do it. It's not my job, I know, but I have just forced myself to go ahead and offer the offering and request the blessing and the favor of God in this battle. I forced myself." Listen to how Samuel responds to what Saul has done. In verse 13, he says, "First of all, you have acted foolishly. You have not kept the commandment of the Lord your God, which he commanded you. Now the Lord would have established your kingdom over Israel forever, but now your kingdom," verse 14, "shall not endure. The Lord has sought out for himself a man after his own heart. And the Lord has appointed him as ruler over his people, because you have not kept what the Lord commanded you." Anytime we try to depart from God's instructions, whether we're taking matters into our own hands, whether we're not being patient to wait for the Lord's blessing on the things that He's promised to bless us with, whether we've laid aside what the Lord has told us to do and decided to try it our way, whatever the reason may be, even if we have forced ourselves, we're working for nothing. The next occasion that we find something like this taking place is actually right there on the next page in your Bible. 1 Samuel chapter 14. Those who try to fill God's place are working for nothing. Chapter 14 tells about the battles and the efforts to fight against the Philistines, and Saul's son Jonathan comes to the forefront of the story as one of the greatest leaders of God's people under Saul's reign. And over in the latter part of their middle or latter part of the chapter, the Bible tells us that Saul gives a very foolish order to the people. It says in verse 24, "The men of Israel were hard pressed on that day, and Saul put the people under oath, saying, "Cursed be the man who eats food before evening and until I have avenged myself on my enemies." You hear how many times the personal pronoun pops up there in that sentence? He involves the entire host of God's people, the armies that are fighting under his command, and they're already beat down and worn out, and he says, nobody gets to eat until the day is done and I have avenged myself on my enemies. What about God? What about God's kingdom? What about God's people? What about God's enemies? What about those who are trying to overcome God? Not overcome you, King Saul, but what about those that are against God? Saul has put himself in God's place. He's more important than God. His words reflect the idea that he has shoved God out of the way, and now Saul is the most important one of all. This ridiculous order almost cost him his son's life, because the Bible tells us how that Jonathan was not aware of the order that Saul had given. And as the army was moving through a wooded area, more than likely under Jonathan's leadership, they came upon a honeycomb that was spilling out of the hive, and the honey was running out, but nobody would touch it because of Saul's order. But Jonathan hadn't heard about the oath that Saul put the people under. And it says that he took the tip of his staff and dipped up some of the honey, and he tasted it, and the Bible says his eyes brightened. What that means is he took nourishment from that natural sugar of that honey, and it increased his ability to function and his ability to think, and gave him a little bit of a charge to his batteries, so to speak. You've been in that situation before, haven't you? And the end of the story comes down to the end of the day, where the people are so famished, they finally get to eat, and they begin to kill and slaughter the animals and eating them without draining the blood out of the meat. Remember, we read that passage this morning from Genesis chapter 9, where God said, "You shall not eat the flesh with the blood in it, for the blood is the life." And it was reported to King Saul that this was going on, and he ultimately found out that someone had eaten during the day. In order to find out who it was, he had the people divided and had a lot cast and prayed to God that the lot would be true, and the lot fell upon himself and Jonathan. And Saul finally asked Jonathan, "What have you done?" And Jonathan said, "I ate some honey this morning. I guess I'm guilty. You'll have to kill me." And of course, the people stepped in. Jonathan hadn't known about his father's order, and the people said, "You can't kill Jonathan. He's the best one we've got." Rash things, rash decisions, rash resolutions lead most often to foolish conclusions. Saul looks less like a mighty ruler now and more like a foolish man who's only concerned for himself. One other thing, and this is perhaps the most familiar, there are times when folks just clearly go against God in disobedience, and Saul illustrates that perfectly in 1 Samuel chapter 15. When God said, "Utterly destroy the Amalekites," and Saul brought back the king, King Agag, and the best of the animals after the battle, and then blamed it on the people and said the people were going to offer sacrifices with all of those animals. Even though God had said, utterly destroy them, don't save anything. And again, Samuel confronted him. And Saul brashly said, I have done as God said. I've done everything the Lord commanded. And Saul says, what's that I hear? Or Samuel says, what's that I hear? The lowing of the oxen, bleating of the sheep. Well, the people, they brought back the best of the animals to offer as sacrifices. Has the Lord as great a delight in sacrifices as he does in obeying his voice? Again, he repeated to Saul what Saul had already been told and what he would be told again later. God has taken the kingdom from you. Your kingdom is no longer established. It'll come to an end when you come to your end. Anytime we go against God's will, whether it's a little thing or a big thing, we're working for nothing. Isn't it amazing how, in spite of God's richest blessings that come to us in ways that we couldn't even begin to anticipate and often couldn't begin to even recognize, often we still find ourselves trying to go our own way. And no matter how hard we work, it's work for nothing. Remember the illustrations that Saul gives us on this point. And don't be found to be working, building, watching, laboring in vain. If you're subject to our Lord's invitation, we're going to sing this song to encourage you. We invite you to respond as we stand together and sing.